From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the State Board of Elections gets a verbal drubbing from the Moreland Commission. Our political observer Alan Shartok speaks with NYPERG's Blair Horner about some of the ballot questions before New Yorkers next week, and we'll remember the one-year anniversary of Superstorm Sandy. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. State Board of Elections officials in New York received a verbal drubbing this week from commissioners on Governor Cuomo's Anti-Corruption Commission, that during a lengthy hearing over the failure to pursue complaints about campaign violations during the past several years. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
During intense questioning by the commissioners, Board of Elections officials admitted that they failed to follow up on hundreds of complaints and potential election law violations over the past several years. And when they did pursue a very small number of cases, they appeared to bungle the probes. Commissioner Kathleen Hogan, who is also Warren County District Attorney, focused on one of the alleged violations. It involved an attempt by one unnamed individual to file 100 new campaign committees in a single day.
There was someone who filed 100 committees. Is that correct?
Hogan asked the board's deputy enforcement counsel, William McCann, what prompted him to more closely scrutinize the applications.
It was an abnormal submission to the board.
A subpoena was issued, and it was discovered that some of the committees were not registered at actual banks as required, but merely ATM machines. Hogan asked McCann why then a letter from the board to the target of the investigation appeared to be worded to steer the case and actually tip the suspected violator off on how to avoid a criminal prosecution.
You write to this individual and say, while the board is troubled by these facts, it assumes that such submission is inadvertent, as intentional submission of documents containing false information to the board could result in a criminal referral. Is that what you do? You assume that there's no intent, because who would intend to commit a crime?
The audience tittered as McCann struggled to answer.
Why did you write that?
McCann replied that the board was not going to refer every violation to a district attorney's office. Hogan then asked McCann about another case where multiple people were potentially illegally voting out of the same address. She wanted to know why, if the alleged violations happened in 2008, enforcement attorneys did not even bring it before the Board of Elections until 2010. McCann answered that staff members were often busy doing other things.
These investigations, or these complaints rather, are in the context of whatever the particular attorney's doing in their normal responsibilities before the board.
McCann told Hogan that the case was ultimately closed because the box of files concerning it was lost during an office move. In their defense, the Board of Election officials say they don't have enough staff to complete the probes, and that in recent years, the governor's budget division has not heeded their requests for new hires. Commissioner Kathleen Rice, who is the Nassau County DA and who tag-teamed Hogan throughout the questioning, said the board received funds back in 2007 to hire up to 21 people to carry out investigations. She asked McCann and the other officials why the board never hired anyone.
Why weren't they filled? Why didn't you jump on it?
Board of Elections co-executive director Robert Bram answered,
"We worked diligently to fill them. No one anticipated the fiscal crisis that we would be under. And
this is before the fiscal crisis.
Finally, an exasperated DA Hogan pointed out that a former investigator told the commission during a deposition that he was never given anything to do.
You had an investigator sitting at his computer asking you for work and playing solitaire and studying his Bible verses because you refused to give him work. Isn't it true you didn't want to look at any of these with a critical eye?
No.
Because that's what it looks like.
Throughout the hearing, the State Board of Elections officials seem to serve as the whipping boys for what the Moreland commissioners and critics say is a dysfunctional oversight agency. McCann, the board's staff attorney, complained of mistreatment by the commissioners.
There's a painting of the Board of Elections, and in particular what I do and what the enforcement unit does, I think, in an unfair light.
The Board of Elections is jointly controlled by the state's two major political parties. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Legislative Gazette's Alan Shartok spoke with Blair Horner, legislative director for the New York Public Interest Research Group this week for his Capital Connection program. On the program, they began by talking about one of the ballot proposals facing New Yorkers next week on Election Day Tuesday, which has to do with extending the retirement age for certain state judges in New York, which is now set at age 70. Alan asked Blair Horner about the ballot proposal.
Again, NYPERG has no position, but I agree with you. The 70-year-old mandatory retirement age was set in the mid-1800s when the average lifespan was in the 40s.
People were dying at 40 or 60.
Right. I mean, they weren't 70. 70 was a big deal.
Yeah, 60 was an old man.
That's right. Nowadays, you could say 80 is the new 70 at least.
Sure.
And so it's basically constitutionally protected age discrimination.
Yeah.
There's no age limit on Supreme Court. There's no age limit on members of the legislature, Congress, probably not even at WAMC since I'm talking to you.
Apparently not.
And yet there is constitutionally protected age discrimination. Vermont has a great one. Their limit is 90, although I would argue that 70 in the mid-1800s is probably like 120 now. But 90 is pretty high, too, and there are states that don't have any limitations at all. And it's sort of a technical thing. It doesn't cover all judges. It only covers judges in state supreme, appellate level, and court of appeals. It's sort of limited in its impact. But it's certainly a step forward in removing age discrimination that's constitutionally protected. And the provision says that judges would have to be reviewed periodically for fitness. So over the ages of 70.
I have a feeling that the governor doesn't want to see this proposition pass with the judges. Do you have any idea what that's about? I talked to some of his people, and they say because of some antediluvian aspect of the way Supreme Court judges are paid, they may get extra money and may cost the taxpayers more.
Well, it may. I mean, obviously, if somebody's on the bench longer as compared to shorter, generally speaking, people get pay raises, and there's
no. I don't think it's...
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the reason either.
Yeah.
Some of the members of the New York State Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in New York State, will have to resign if the retirement age stay in place. And the person that will drive the debate over who the replacements will be the governor sometime in his second term. And so politics may play a role in this. I mean, a governor, you know, who knows what's going to happen next year, but I think it's likely that the governor is in pretty good shape running for re-election.
Yeah, right.
If he gets a second term, his ability to sort of leave an imprint on the history of the state of New York in many ways is going to be the reflection of what he does with the Court of Appeals as compared to his policies. Typically, governors come in, they get replaced, a lot of their policies get vaporized. But if you put people on the court, your legacy is sort of enshrined for a much longer period of time. The Court of Appeals members get 14-year terms.
That's Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok speaking with NYPERG's Blair Horner. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With elections set to take place on Tuesday, voter turnout in off-year elections is generally much lower than in presidential election years, and turnout among young voters is no exception. Three politicians who have set records for being the youngest in one political office or another have ideas about where the problems lie. Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn this week has this in-depth report on the vote.
Okay. I think I would definitely want to have a say in government because it's really the only way, like, a normal, ordinary citizen who's not involved in politics could have any kind of power over what the representatives decide. But I also feel like I wouldn't know that it was coming out. I wouldn't really, like, in my normal life, with all the priorities, like school, work, family, and everything, it's kind of, I don't really know directly when things are, what the real key issues are. Like, if the government could text me the day before, big vote tomorrow, I would be there. But honestly, I'm probably not going to put it on my calendar.
That's 17-year-old Jackson Lasota. He's a senior at Haldane High School in Cold Spring in Putnam County. He says when he turns 18 and can vote, he may choose not to do so in an off-election year, when propositions and municipal races rule the ballot. Haldane senior class president Shauna Ricketts, also 17, says she cannot wait to vote, especially when there are statewide ballot propositions. There are six for the 2013 November election.
I think that a statewide, like event, let's say, would greater impact us than, let's say, a governor, because you don't know exactly what you're going to get with the governor, like, in the end. But with that, you have a set, this is what we're voting on.
26-year-old freshman New York State Assemblyman James Skoufis, a Democrat, says there's a reason young voters are not showing up in off-election years.
You have to give them a reason to come out and support you. You know, you just talking about property taxes and talking about, you know, issues that traditionally be talked about, road pavement on the local level, garbage pickup, you know, those are critical services, don't get me wrong, but you have to give young people a reason to come out and vote for you. And more times than not, they're not given that reason. And, you know, that's by and large, I think, why they don't come out and vote. There are other aspects to it, but I think that is the biggest one. You need to motivate them.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro also sees the need to motivate young voters.
I think the public, especially young people, want to be motivated, want to be encouraged, want to be inspired by people who have something to offer, even if it's not something they entirely agree with. So that kind of enthusiasm from the elected official or the candidate is critical to getting young voters. That's number one. But number two, we have to really at all levels not live by that old saying, you know, the only thing you can't talk about is politics and religion. Talk about it. I mean, politics is us.
Molinaro's political career began in 1994 when he was elected as a village trustee in Tivoli at age 18, becoming the youngest elected official in state history. 1 year later, he won the race for mayor. At the time, he was the youngest mayor in the country. He served as a state assemblyman for 5 years and was elected county executive in 2011 at age 37. He is currently the youngest county executive in Dutchess County history.
I'll go to college classes or high school classes all the time, and I'll show them in a room of 100 people what voter turnout looks like. And in the end of this little exercise, of 100 students, there'll be 25 standing, and I'll say to them, these are the 25 of America's 18 to 35-year-olds who in a local election actually participate. And the, you 75 sitting down have really excluded you from that process. If we were in a room of 100 senior citizens, it would be exactly the opposite. So when politicians are paying attention to issues and speaking to issues, who are they going to pay attention to, the people who show up or the people who don't? So encouraging young people to understand that it's a matter of showing up. Showing up changes policy, changes decision-making, affects outcomes.
Skoufis, who represents portions of Orange County and a piece of Rockland, was first elected to public office in 2009 as a councilman in Woodbury at age 21, the town's youngest in history. Now the youngest sitting assembly member, Skoufis says even if candidates address issues important to young voters, getting to them is another matter if they are busy with schools, jobs, and commuting.
Young voters are oftentimes very difficult to reach. Even if you have great issues that will resonate with them, if they don't hear them or see your issues or see you, they're going to have no idea.
32-year-old David Carlucci, an independent Democrat who represents a large part of Rockland County and a bit of Westchester, is the youngest sitting state senator.
18 to 24-year-olds, only 46% of them are registered in New York State. That leaves over a million young people in New York. A million people between the ages of 18 and 24 are just not registered to vote in New York State.
He says those statistics are based on U.S. Census 2010 data. Carlucci says you cannot tell someone, go vote, but you can make it easier. To this end, he has sponsored a bill to allow 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register to vote so they are automatically enrolled upon turning 18.
Why don't we register people when they turn 16 years of age? We get them registered to vote, get them in the system, so there's no barrier to when they decide to actually go out and vote. So this would capture people when they get their learner's permit, when they get their driver's license for the first time, when they're at the DMV, where they usually would enroll to vote. Let's get them right then. This will go a long way in terms of getting people captured, making it easier for the Board of Elections when it rolls around and there's a spike during the presidential election. When people are running to get registered, they're already in the system.
The seniors at Cold Springs Haldane High School like this idea. Shauna Ricketts, Jackson Lasota, and Tyler Mell. So does their participation in government and advanced placement government teacher Melissa Seidman.
I think it's more convenient for the people who are maybe on the fence about voting and wouldn't really like have the initiative to like actually register.
I feel like it would make a significant impact because people are just so overwhelmed by the fact that they're so overwhelmed and yet they don't know exactly what they need to do to register to vote. And it would be getting rid of some of the excuses of not voting.
And right. I think it would increase turnout. Because yeah. Right now you can go to the DMV to register, but I think by doing it automatically, then maybe you'll at least have no excuse that I'm not registered.
Carlucci has sponsored another bill he says will make it easier to vote.
One of the things that I've also geared towards a younger demographic is allowing the Board of Elections to accept electronic applications. So right now, we can't do that.
Such an effort could capture young voters attending college out of state, but whose primary residences are still in New York. Both of Carlucci's bills have sponsors in the Assembly. He says he knows of no opposition, but suggests the legislation does not elicit excitement and a sense of urgency, something he hopes to change during the next session.
My biggest contention is, hey, if you don't want to vote, you don't want to vote. But if you want to vote, and there's a barrier to you voting, that's a travesty.
Assemblyman Skoufis believes that young political candidates can provide an impetus for young people to vote.
You know, me personally, there's identity politics there, where someone who's in their 20s or even 30s or a teenager, late teenager, they see a young person running for office, and they're able to connect me because of that identity politics.
Issues, he says, like college affordability and expanding rental options when it comes to housing. Skoufis says the problem is that some of the issues that resonate with young voters are not campaign issues on the local level, which makes increasing young voter turnout during off-election years even more challenging.
On the town, the village level, there really is no room to talk about college affordability. I mean, that's just not in your purview.
Seidman believes her students should hear about the benefits of voting.
They already come in with this, their expectations of if, should they vote or should they not vote from their families, because they're influenced by their families a lot, I think. And I think it's important to see what the process is and whether they want to vote or not, but at least hear the benefits to voting and why it's important to our society.
She recently invited a guest speaker to her classroom to discuss voter registration. Molinaro admits the difficulty in getting young voters to the polls.
It's very hard to make young people understand that they have the ability to impact the outcome and really change the way in which decisions are made.
High school senior Jackson Lasota is an example.
If you don't participate, the events will still unfold. Like, if you don't vote, something will still happen with the laws, whatever change was going to be made. Like, you can just not be a part of the government and it will still conduct itself. I feel like that's what a lot of people feel like.
Do you feel like that?
A lot of times, yes. Like, you're just out of the loop, kind of, because you're just one in the sea of millions.
Again, here's Molinaro.
And if you're an 18-year-old with one vote on one day in November, you have the power to alter the outcome immeasurably. And to think you don't is a mistake.
17-year-old Haldane High School senior Tyler Mell says he will register to vote the day he turns 18.
Even though some people will say that they don't, that voting doesn't, you know, one person won't make a difference. You know, there is always that chance that you can make a difference. I mean, even if it's not one of the a major election, it's still your civic duty. It's your participation in government.
It is participation that Molinaro, Skoufis, and Carlucci hope will increase.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina.
1 year ago, Hurricane Sandy devastated the eastern seaboard with high winds, heavy rain, and a storm surge of more than 13 feet, claiming 44 lives and displacing thousands.
The superstorm turned the greatest city in the world into a city of darkness and called new attention to climate change. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a look and listen back.
October 29, 2012 began with ominous warnings for the East Coast. At 8 a.m., the National Hurricane Center reported tropical storm force winds along the coasts of southern New Jersey, Delaware, and eastern Virginia. No one knew the exact track Sandy would take, but they understood it wouldn't be good. Entergy Vermont Yankee spokesman Rob Williams told WAMC how the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant was shoring up for the storm.
We've taken several actions in preparation for this storm, as we would any major storm. For one thing, testing our emergency diesel generators, which provide backup power should we lose our normal source of electricity. Also, topping off fuel tanks for the diesel generators on site.
In Massachusetts, Secretary of Energy and Environmental Affairs Rick Sullivan said the Commonwealth was bracing for the worst.
Every city and town has been assigned a community liaison from the utility, and we expect if they have not already, that by the close of business today, all of the utilities will in fact have made contact with that community liaison.
Preparations were also underway up and down the Hudson Valley, still smarting from Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee. Ulster County Executive Mike Hine appeared on WAMC's roundtable.
We understand after Hurricane Irene that the response we made was fantastic at that point, but you can do even better. So there are lessons learned across the entire state and across the entire nation.
As the day progressed, all eyes and ears were on the approaching hurricane. Gusts of about 70 miles an hour had already been recorded in southern New Jersey when, at 7:42 p.m., Consolidated Edison shut down power to a large part of lower Manhattan as a precaution, in hopes that the electricity could be restored more quickly once the storm passed. 8:43 p.m., Sandy made landfall along the New Jersey coastline, and more than 1 million lost power across the Northeast. The storm surge flooded New York City streets, tunnels, and subway lines. NYU Hospital lost power, and its backup generator failed. Dozens of homes were destroyed in a massive fire in the Breezy Point section of the Rockaways. University at Albany's Chris Thorncroft, chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences, spoke the day after Sandy hit.
We had, you know, tropical storm, hurricane winds at landfall, storm surge, snowfall in the Appalachians. So clearly a lot of problems in the eastern seaboard.
Superstorm Sandy went down in the books as the second costliest Atlantic hurricane on record. The National Climatic Data Center estimated the cost of Sandy at $65 billion, following Hurricane Katrina on the list of costliest disasters ever to hit the United States. The federal government to date has spent more than $14 billion in assistance to New York and New Jersey alone. Many suggested that global warming played a role in the intensity of the cyclone, but researchers were unable to say just how responsible climate change was for the development and track of Sandy. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo obviously had reached a personal tipping point.
We must rethink and redesign for the long term because extreme weather, as we have learned, is the new normal.
Climatologist Jessica Reynolds with the Northeast Regional Climate Center at Cornell says there really is a new normal.
Now, that doesn't mean that we can expect hurricanes to hit, you know, New York City every year, every couple of years, but we are expecting to see more hurricane seasons becoming, you know, more active and more of these strong hurricanes.
The recovery, relief, and rebuilding efforts in the days, weeks, and months that followed were massive. WAMC joined the relief effort to assist victims of Superstorm Sandy, raising more than $240,000 during a special one-day fund drive last November 8th. New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli says Tuesday his office continues to process contracts for infrastructure repairs, debris removal, and beach restorations, even as challenges remain.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1344. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.